good evening. I'm Melissa Idris, and you're watching The Future is Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. My guest today is Juliana Uy. She is the founder of the social enterprise XEd Malaysia. She's been recognized by the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And she's also a recipient of the Merdeka Award Grant for International Attachment. This for her work in empowering young parents in reproductive and social health education. Now, the Merdeka Awards is not just considered one of Malaysia's most prestigious awards, but its grant has proudly supported some 24 individuals since 2013, and 50% of the recipients have been women. So, Juliana, I'm so delighted to welcome you on the show. Thank you so much for finding time to speak to me today. Welcome.
Thank you, Melissa, all right, for having me.
Wonderful. All right. So I thought that we could begin this conversation by maybe telling us a little bit about your journey, because as I understand it, you have been serving as a reproductive and social health peer educator for more than a decade now, training, you know, youths from different backgrounds, refugees, asylum seekers, even young sex workers. May I ask you how you came into this field of reproductive health education? How did you get passionate about it?
It all started out in university. My lecturer, associate professor, Dr. Mary, she literally got us out to the streets to do our assignments. So we have visited drop-in centers and we did assignments interviewing people living with HIV, drug users, young sex workers, and transgender. And in the process, we've learned about how prejudice, stigma, and discrimination can really affect one so much. And especially when it comes to sexual and reproductive health and sex education, is also a taboo topic. And because it's not discussed much enough, how it eventually affects our health as well overall.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk to you about how it does affect our health, and there are kind of a ripple effect to not providing comprehensive sexuality education. Before we kind of get into that, a little bit more about the journey. So you are passionate about the field, you've started a social enterprise, XEd Malaysia. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the social enterprise aims to create a safe space so that young people, parents, and the community can have this conversation that is a taboo topic in a safe manner. Yes.
Okay. Is it important for you to work with young people? I noticed that you call yourself a peer educator, meaning that you're speaking to young people as a peer.
Yes. So at the first part of my journey, I've been a peer educator. So I've been to kindergarten, primary schools, secondary schools, university, and in the community to provide talks on sex education. But along the way, I realized that having just 1 hour or even a 2-3 day session is really not enough, because sex education is a topic that you discuss at different phases of your life, right? And there are different issues that will come out at different phases of our lives. So that's why I also found that it's important to speak to parents. And at the same time, many young parents also come up to us, you know, like how I can start this conversation with my children. And of course, there are also caretakers, a single parent who want to know how they can do it better. Yeah, so that's why I came up with the idea of creating a toolkit to make it easy.
I really love that parents are hoping to break the generational cycle of being ill-informed or not having the right information or education, so that they are trying to equip themselves so they can better equip their children as well. So tell me, you mentioned a toolkit. Tell me a little bit more about the toolkit.
Yeah, so for the moment, I'm trying to, I'm thinking of putting what items together, but what I have now are little dolls here, as you can see.
I can see.
And testing them with parents to see what they think about it. There are also card games, and I'm developing a board game. Basically to make the session more interactive and also easy to use by parents. Yeah, because the current module that we have, it's hundreds of pages of them. We need to read the activities, read the trainer's guide in order for you to run the activities. So that's why I think in order to make it user-friendly, it needs to also come from what the parents think about it, as well as from the young people themselves in terms of how they want the session to be. Yeah.
So I can see the dolls behind, you mentioned games. How young are we talking about, Juliana? I mean, I understand that comprehensive sex education has to be age appropriate as well. So you're thinking about finding ways to incorporate this into parenting, into the home, into daily living. How young are you think? How young is it necessary to begin comprehensive sex education?
Right, that's a question that I get a lot. Basically, young parents can start to prepare themselves even before they decide to have a child in that process, for them to first talk about what kind of values that they value as a couple, as a family. And in terms of when we should start, some people start as young as the child is an infant. So when the parent is bathing the child or communicating with the child, they start using the correct terms. Yeah, to teach them that this is your penis, this is your vagina, and so on. So the benefit of this is that as the child grows up, because we have been mentioning these words and we've practiced it many, many times, as the child grows up, they are also able to, as you mentioned earlier, like normalize the whole conversation, and it becomes easier eventually. But of course, for parents with teenage children who want to start the conversation, it's never too late to start at any age. Yeah.
It's definitely never too late, but it becomes a bit harder when your children are older. I think that there becomes it's difficult. I think for many Asian families, they find it difficult to talk about topics like sex, like reproductive health. I think there's also this myth that the more you talk about it, the more it's as though you are condoning it. And there are issues of religion and morality tied to this topic as well. You work with parents, Juliana. How do you navigate these types of conversational challenges with them?
That's a very good question. The first step of doing it is always getting parents to first share about their perspective, what they have learned when they were younger. And much of what we've learned when we were younger is either based on most of it is based on myths and misconception about sex education. There's also the value part where we view sex as something that is a taboo. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in a way where you don't openly speak about it, and try to shift them to this safe space where we start thinking about sex positively in a healthy manner instead of a very...
Sometimes it's kind of caught up in this cultural sensitivities that makes it even more taboo. So often we don't think about it in an accurate, non-judgmental, and age-appropriate way. Let's talk a little bit more about those myths and misconceptions that you mentioned, Juliana. Can you tell us a little bit about what are some of the myths that you've had to work hard to bust?
Okay, firstly, in terms of sex education as an overall issue, many parents are worried that if we start talking about sex education, it will cause their children to be curious about sex and explore it. Some of them believe that their children's innocence will be, you know, like corrupted because we discuss about sex education. But in fact, research has shown that comprehensive sex education have been successful in reducing the age of first sex or sexual initiation. And for young people who eventually do decide to have sex, they do so in a safe manner where they use contraception and condom. They are aware of ways to prevent unplanned or unintended pregnancy, as well as sexually transmitted infection. Yeah. I think the other set of myths and misconceptions is that we learn sex education through pornography. So when we ask a young person, where can you learn about sex and sexuality? Most of the time, the first resources that they refer to are pornography, friends. Some of them get forwarded materials and they learn from there. Yeah. But for those who finally realize that you can learn it through comprehensive sex education, they were then better equipped to know where to get the right resources.
All right, okay. Juliana, there's still so much to cover. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back and continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Juliana Ui of XEd Malaysia. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned to The Futures Female. Welcome back to The Futures Female. I'm Melissa Idris and I'm chatting today to Juliana Ui. She is the founder of the social enterprise XEd Malaysia. She's also a recipient of the prestigious Merdeka Award grant for international achievement for her work in empowering young parents in reproductive and social health education. She is passionate about ensuring that Malaysia has accurate, non-judgmental and age-appropriate comprehensive sexuality education for every child. And I want to talk about that, Juliana, about the consequences of perhaps, if I may use the word, depriving our children of proper, of comprehensive sexuality education and awareness about reproductive health and rights. Sometimes I think the conversation immediately skews to teenage pregnancy or baby dumping, but I feel that in denying our children proper education about reproductive health, it is also denying them an opportunity for healthy adolescence. Can you talk to us a little bit about what a typical young Malaysian girl, let's just say a teenage Malaysian girl, might go through if she is denied comprehensive sexuality education?
A teenage girl who is deprived of comprehensive sex education may be coerced into having a sexual relationship, not knowing that she has a choice and she's able to provide consent. So in some of my trainings, when I ask young people, when do you know whether you're ready to have sex? Most of them will share things like, okay, I'll know it when I have that feeling of readiness, right? But with comprehensive sex education, we provide them with other aspects that they can consider, from the physical aspect of preventing unplanned pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, right to the social factor, whether you are doing it because you're pressured to do so, or whether because you are unaware that you have the right to provide consent, or if you're really doing it knowing that you still feel uncomfortable. Yeah, so it's very important for a young girl to know that if you are not feeling comfortable about it, or if a decision would cause fear or worry in you later, that you have that right to make that decision before the act, or even in the middle of the act if you choose not to proceed. Yeah.
So empowering them with that knowledge, right? Mm.
Yes. And looking at if after they have had sexual intercourse, they should also be provided with the information on what they can do about it. For example, many young people do not know about emergency contraception. And we hear reports of young girls who are pregnant but not knowing that they are pregnant, even though they do not have their menstruation for months. Yeah. And that's why, because they do not have accurate information, it leads to the issues that you've mentioned earlier, that they are so afraid and so scared that they do not know what to do. They give birth alone. We hear of instances of young girls giving birth alone in toilets. And sometimes because of unassisted birth, it even, you know, causes them their life. And what do they do with the infant after that? Yeah, so I think you've rightly pointed out, Melissa, that the society focuses on the issue of baby dumping and unintended pregnancy, but we forgot that we are the ones who are also depriving young people of sex education and the information that they really need to lead a healthier life.
There seems to be a lot of onus on or focus on young women, girls, teenage girls in this discussion. What is the role of comprehensive sexuality education for young boys?
That's a good question, because most of the time we focus just on the girl, right? Even in news reports of baby dumping, we don't really read about the boy or the man, right? So in comprehensive sex education, we also learn about gender equality, gender stereotypes and bias. So at the same time, it would also lift that burden off of male or boys who are expected to who have societal expectations that most often are stressful to them as well. For example, unable to express themselves or having the burden of maybe, like, you know, fully providing for the family and so on. Yes. So sex education will also dispel that gender bias.
Okay, all right. Definitely, I mean, it affects us all, right? So again, changing that narrative, having more equality improves the lives of everyone. Can I ask you, Juliana, when you do the work, and I know sometimes the work, particularly in Malaysia, can be quite challenging. You may face roadblocks, or you may face backlash from people who don't agree with the work that you do. Can I ask you, if you were to imagine what success looked like in your line of work, what would that look like? What would success look like?
Melissa, you're right that when we talk about sex education, there are many roadblocks. But what I've learned in this journey is also how can we be more inclusive, which that means how can I be inclusive that even the most conservative of parents or young person would be comfortable to start this conversation. And actually, to be honest, the Merdeka Award Trust highlighting on this issue have made it like spotlighting the issue has made it also easier for me to bring up this issue. So
if you were to say, you know, I'm sure that many more years of work in this line, what would you like to see happen, or what kind of change would you like to see progressively happen in Malaysia, and what would that vision be at the end of the tunnel?
I hope that when we can create this safe space to talk about sexual and reproductive health in a more positive, honest, and open manner, every girl and every boy, every woman, every man, and everyone in the community can realize or can live up to their best potential. And many more young girls can also come to this show and speak to you, Melissa, about how that has changed them and how that has empowered them.
Yeah, hopefully we will be able to, in the generations to come, empower our children with this knowledge. You mentioned the Merdeka Award grant, and you got that in 2019. I'm just wondering how the grant, because I believe it enables you to collaborate with an internationally recognized institution. How has that informed your work or progressed your work, particularly because since then we've had a worldwide pandemic, of which I think sexual and reproductive health and sexual reproductive rights have been impacted. How have you seen the grant change the course of your work and the pandemic change the course of your work?
The pandemic has shown us that when there's a challenge of people unable to move around, how severe the outcome can be, right? We hear of young girls who travel even during MCO because they were sexually abused. And we hear of young boys having to smear their genital organs with feces because they want to avoid being raped and so on. So the pandemic has allowed us to look at issues related to sexual and reproductive health in a more severe manner, and also the need to reach out to the most underserved, especially communities who do not have access to like electronic devices and data plan and so on. Yeah, so it has prompted me to really think of how to overcome these challenges in the design of the toolkit. Yes, and I definitely also look forward to the attachment later. That will really help me to see how I can be more inclusive in addressing the cultural as well as the religious aspect of the toolkit.
Juliana, when you, I know you don't, we're not having to reinvent the wheel here when it comes to sexual and reproductive health. Do you look to other countries, perhaps with similar types of cultural sensitivities or a taboo around sex and sexual education? Do you find things that you can learn from other countries and incorporate in your work?
That's a very good question, Lisa. So, from an Asia-Pacific study, even though 2/3 of countries claim that they have some form of policy or law related to sexual and reproductive health and sex ed, when they interviewed the young people, less than 1/3 of them said it was enough, right? But what we can see now is that there are some family planning associations, like the Hong Kong Family Planning Association, have produced anatomically correct dolls and other resources that we can use. And looking at the curriculum, there are countries like Denmark, Netherlands, Switzerland who have a comprehensive curriculum, but that doesn't come with its challenges because the parents there think that exposing their children too early to explicit materials, they disagree with that, right? So coming back to Malaysia, we have a very much abstinence-based, abstinence class curriculum. We can learn from other countries in terms of how to supplement that with parents playing their roles to guide their children based on their sexual development, based on their age, as well as based on what they experience as a young person from media, from the messages that they receive. Yeah, so I would see that this is something that all of us can learn, and maybe even some other countries can learn from us, because Malaysia is a very multicultural nation and we have very rich experiences as Malaysian, right? Living a multicultural life as a Malaysian and how this really helped us to incorporate it to the toolkit. Yes.
I think definitely we have something to offer in terms of experience. Juliana, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, and I want to say thank you for taking time to speak to me today, but also thank you for all the work that you've been doing. Appreciate it, and you know, keep up the good work. I hope to have you back on the show again. That was my conversation with Juliana Ui, founder of the social enterprise XEd Malaysia. I'm Melissa Idris, and I will be back with you same time next week for another episode of The Future's Female. Make sure you tune in then. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.